Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, everybody. Guess what's back? It's not cookies. It's not muffins. It's biscuits. A hockey podcast with an ice cream sandwich logo that we get crap about. And I'm Dave Lozo of, I guess, Vice Sports and some other stuff, and my Canadian buddy. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Dave. How have you been?
Well, we haven't really talked like this in like 6 months, so let me recap everything that's happened in my life. Married, divorced, bought a house, lost it, couldn't pay the mortgage, re-enrolled in college, became a doctor, malpractice thing, can't really get into that yet, it's still ongoing. And I'm back doing the hockey podcast thing. What have you been up to?
Right on. I played video games and took a lot of naps.
God, why didn't I do that? This malpractice thing is going to break me. As you can probably tell by the amount of minutes left in the show, this is an abbreviated podcast. But you know what? You haven't gotten anything from us in months. So you're going to take this and you're going to like it and you're going to be happy about it. And we're going to just get into the biggest news of the day. We missed the first month of the season, so we're just going to do this podcast as if it's actually October 1st. And the Vegas Golden Knights, they're 1-0. They looked good in their opener. Marc-Andre Fleury, I feel like if the goaltending stays healthy, they're going to be a really tough team to beat. And I think that's going to be the big story the first half of the season. Healthy Golden Knights winning a lot of games with their goaltending.
I think they're going to be right up there with the New Jersey Devils. At the top of the league.
Yeah, I really feel like them, the Devils, they're going to be the teams that are going to be the teams to beat. I really feel like Montreal is going to struggle. Arizona might not win a game in regulation all season, I'm going to say. And I mean, these are just October 7th predictions, so we'll see how they pan out. I think that's all the time we have for that bit because we only have so much time to do this. So, it is Tuesday. It is Election Day in America, the one-year anniversary of the worst day of many of our lives. But it's also the start of a whole new world for Matt Duchene and for Kyle Turris and for a bunch of other guys. I think that cheeseburger goalie as well has got a new address. But I expected that since the last time we did a podcast, we pretty much would spend 10 to 15 minutes on every episode of Biscuits talking about how dumb Joe Sakic is. And I am the first to admit how surprised I am that here we are on November 7th, right? The 7th. And a trade was made. It involved Matt Duchene. It involved the Colorado Avalanche and Joe Sakic. And I feel like Joe Sakic didn't get the worst of it. And I'm stunned. I really am.
Yes. And just for background for the listeners, they should realize that after our last podcast in the playoffs, you and I basically stormed out and said we weren't doing another show until Matt Duchene was traded.
That was our protest, yes.
It was in solidarity with Matt Duchene, and it, in hindsight, maybe a miscalculation because we thought it was going to be 2 weeks, and it ended up taking like 6 months for this deal to get done. But it did get done, and whenever there's a trade, especially a trade involving three teams, I feel like we're supposed to just immediately declare winners and losers, and these guys did well and these guys didn't. I kind of like this trade for all three teams.
Oh my goodness. You're so out of practice right now. You have to rip one team and praise another team. That's how a podcast works.
This is, yeah, this is, we're doing the second season all positive, just so people know. First season was nothing but complaints and grievances, and this one, it's just going to be sunshine and rainbows. So, yeah, the Avalanche get not really what they said or the, what we were told they were trying to get. They didn't get the fabled pick prospect and player type deal where you get somebody back who's going to slot in your lineup right away and help immediately. Some of these guys might play for them, but they didn't get somebody who immediately kind of steps into Duchesne's spot in the lineup and as well as the futures. But they did get a ton of assets back, and I think that given what Joe Sakic was up against, I think you have to be, I think if you're a realistic Avalanche fan, you have to be happy with this. If you had maybe bought into the idea that you were going to get as much as was suggested they were asking for, then maybe it's a bit of a letdown. It's a little bit of a quantity over quality approach. Mm-hmm. But when you're as bad as the Avalanche, I mean, you need some lottery tickets, and the best way to win the lottery is to get a lot of tickets. And so they got, I mean, really seven assets, but really six. Andrew Hammond is more of a salary dump, but you know, that's not bad for one guy, especially in today's NHL. That's a pretty decent haul. And you know what? It works for Joe Sakic, because now we can't really evaluate the trade for a few more years. So it buys him some time of not getting constantly ripped for not getting enough back, because we don't really know what he got back yet.
See, to me, I thought when Matt Duchesne got traded, it was going to be the way Kyle Turris got traded, where the team that picked up Matt Duchesne was going to do what Nashville did. They're getting a center. They can plug him in on their second line, and they're instantly better because they really didn't trade anything off of their current roster that they use on an everyday basis. And Matt Duchesne ends up going to a place where I admit he's a little bit better than Kyle Turris, probably. But that just seems like if I'm Ottawa, that seems like a lot to give up, because you don't want to re-sign Kyle Turris for the money Kyle Turris wants when you're just going to give that money to Matt Duchesne in a year anyway. And you had to give up all this other stuff, like future stuff for sure, to get that guy. And Matt Duchesne's going to re-sign there. I'm pretty sure that's how every hockey trade works, where it's like, yeah, July 1st, you're going to re-sign, right? Yes. Okay, great, good. I think it would take a lot to have Matt Duchesne not come back. Like Erik Karlsson whispered to him on June 30th, I'm not coming back. Don't come back here. I'm leaving. If he does that, then I understand that. But I just really think Nashville is a team that went to the Stanley Cup final last year and would have won probably if Ryan Johansson didn't get hurt. And now they've essentially replaced Mike Fisher and James Neal with Scott Hartnell, who's been okay. He's been fine. He's not James Neal, of course. And they replaced Mike Fisher with Kyle Turris. So to me, I think they're better up front now than they were last year. And Colorado, the thing with Colorado is, yeah, they got a bunch of stuff. They got a bunch of lottery tickets, but I don't know if I want Joe Sakic to be the one scratching them off. I'm afraid of what he's going to do with the lottery tickets. Like, he's going to like scratch off the lottery ticket and win like $5 and be like, I'm buying five more lottery tickets. Like, no, take your $5. That's good. You've profited on your $1 lottery ticket. That's a good thing. And maybe he's going to buy like a lottery ticket that's already expired. I don't know if I trust Joe Sakic to be that guy, but I find it so weird how positive Ottawa Senators fans are, because yeah, like it's a little bit of a better center. Like Kyle Turris was that like back end, you know, He's a first line center, but he's not in the top two thirds of top line centers, I would say. Like, he's way better in Nashville as a 2C than a 1C in Ottawa. But man, it's just so much to give up when you're just going to have to give Matt Duchesne the money you didn't want to give Kyle Turris a year later. I don't know. I think everyone did okay, but
it was kind of fascinating to watch the reaction up here in Ottawa over the last few days, because you had like on Friday, we find out that this trade is cooking and that something is happening, and it's Kyle Turris is involved and Matt Duchesne is involved. And, you know, you had all these Senator fans who were like, great, Matt Duchesne is way better than Kyle Turris. This is going to be a great deal. And then the news comes down that the deal has fallen through and the deal is dead and it's not going to happen. And you have all these Senator fans who are like, great, Kyle Turris is at least as good as Matt Duchene.
And now,
and then 2 days later, the deal is back on again. And you know, so Senator fans are back to being excited. I feel like the Ottawa side of this deal is easily the most interesting. I mean, from Colorado's perspective, okay, it's been 2 years. You've been trying to trade this guy. At some point, you got to take what you can get, and they got a decent return. The thing that I will give Joe Sakic some credit for is that while all this was going on, the Avalanche get out to a decent start. They were 8-5 when the deal went down, and I think a bad GM might have taken that as a signal that, right, oh geez, yeah, our rebuild is done. We fixed the team, and maybe we go and move this guy for that more immediate help, as opposed to getting a package that's pretty much entirely futures. And instead, he did the smart thing, which is to acknowledge that one good month doesn't mean that your 48-point team is suddenly a contender again.
Right.
And if it turns out that they are, he can always turn around and use some of those assets as the season goes on to bring in help. But I think it's pretty straightforward from Colorado's standpoint. It's very straightforward for Nashville. You're a good team. You're a Stanley Cup contender. Give up a piece of the future to make yourself better right now. And I think that would make sense for any team in the NHL, but especially Nashville, right? Like, you look at that market, which has been kind of up and down as a hockey market over the years, has this great run last year, captures the attention of, you know, not just the city, but like the whole region suddenly is, you know, this is the place to be. This is the big story. You don't want to be in a situation where you get that Stanley Cup hangover and the next season you're struggling along to even make the playoffs. Like, this is your time as an organization to really push forward. So absolutely, I think, and I mean, it's David Poile. David Poile knows what he's doing when it comes to making trades. So he's kind of inherited the throne as far as the best GM in the league in terms of making player for player deals. So you trust him, and it makes perfect sense for Nashville. And then back to Ottawa, and you're right. Like, it does come down a lot of it to how much better do you think Matt Duchene is than Kyle Turris? Because if you just look at the numbers and the production, they're pretty similar.
Right.
And you could come away with the argument that Matt Duchene isn't all that much better than Kyle Turris. The flip side of that is, you know, you look at who they were playing with. You look at, you know, what they were doing 5-on-5. You look at the fact that just, you know, I know appeal to authority and all that, and people in the hockey world can be wrong about things, but Matt Duchene was on Team Canada at the Olympics just a couple of years ago.
So was Chris Kunitz.
Well, there is that too. Yes. But you know, Matt Duchene he was viewed as, you know, like, Kyle Turris is a real good player, and I think he's earned a lot of respect over the last few years, but he was never in these sorts of conversations. So,
right. Duchene was a guy they were arguing to take in front of Tavares in his draft year. And whenever those guys get to the NHL, like, remember David Legwand? Like, he was getting traded for first round picks when he was like 35, because he was a really early pick, like 15 years earlier. Like, GMs love that pedigree stuff. And that's why Duchene is there over Kyle Turris, because Ottawa likes him more.
So, as I mean, they do. And they gave up, you know, the question of how much they gave up, they basically gave up Turris and two first round picks, because they gave up the guy they took in the first round this summer, and they gave up their pick next summer. And that, you know, that certainly sounds like a lot. It's maybe not as much as people think. The prospect that they sent over to Colorado, he was, you know, remember Ottawa, because they made that run to the conference final, they were picking at the very end of the first round. And he's kind of one of these, there's this debate when you have those picks of, do you swing for the fences or do you just try to make contact and hit a solid single? And this guy was like a solid single type pick, low ish ceiling, decent chance to play in the NHL, but he's already a guy that is kind of projected as a third line center. So it's, you know, you never know, but this isn't a guy who seems like he's going to come back and turn into an elite player and bite them. And the 2018 first round pick is apparently protected, so that if it ends up in the top 10, it kicks into to 2019. So, right. Which is, by the way, something that way more GMs should do when they're making these sorts of trades. So I give Pierre Dorion credit for that. And I give him credit because, you know, we just said with Joe Sack, again, we're not really going to know for a few years. David Poile has been doing this forever. I mean, he's got all the credibility in the world. Pierre Dorion's like relatively new at this job, and he's the one guy who's kind of put his neck out there on this, because if over the next 70 games, if Kyle Turris outperforms Matt Duchene, everybody is going to immediately say, well, the Senators lost this trade and potentially lost it badly because of everything else that they had to give up. So, you know, I give Pierre Dorion full credit because there's, you know, we've talked a lot last year. I've written a lot over the years about GMs being too timid, too risk averse, kind of more interested in keeping their own jobs nice and safe and cozy rather than trying to make their teams better. And whatever you think of what the Senators did here, Pierre Dorion obviously feels like this makes the team better. He went and paid the price to do it, and he exposed himself to probably not a small amount of risk as far as how he's going to be looked at as a GM in this league. And I think a lot of guys would have found a way to talk themselves out of doing this sort of deal. And instead he went and pulled the trigger, and certainly gave us a lot to talk about.
You think Pierre Dorion listens to the podcast and he's like, I don't want to get ripped when these guys come back, and I want to make a trade that's going to make everybody happy. So here I go.
You know what I think? I think Pierre Dorion listens to the podcast, didn't want to get ripped, but by the time it got to November, he's like, well, they're not coming back. I don't got to worry that like the, you know, Uncle Sean and Dave's cranky hockey complaint hour is going to take aim at me. So I think I'm safe. Sorry, Pierre.
Oh, speaking of complaints, I found this to be the weirdest part of the deal because I thought somebody was like being sarcastic with me on Twitter. You know, like people reply to you and you don't really know who they are. You can't tell if they're being earnest or if they're being like sarcastic. A guy replied to me about the Duchene trade because I was like, this isn't really all that good for Ottawa. It's fine, but it's, I don't know. I thought the team that got Matt Duchene was going to be the team loading up, you know, Matt Duchene on the third line of the Penguins, or Matt Duchene on the second line of a team that's already got an awesome number one center, like John Tavares. But I mean, Ottawa kind of sort of lateral-ish kind of a move. And somebody was like, well, now he's 3.5 hours from his hometown where he spends his summers. 3.5 hours. And somebody replied later and was like, actually, it's more like 3. Okay, let's say it's 3 hours. Let's say you live 3 hours from the place where you grew up and you spend your summers there, your off seasons there. What's the difference if you're getting in a car in Ottawa and driving the 3.5 hours, or if you live in LA because you play for the Kings and you get on a plane and fly to Ottawa and then drive the 3.5 hours? You're home for the summer then, whether it's 9.5 hours or 3.5 hours. When you're a hockey player during the season, you don't go home to your mom and dad's place to get your laundry done on your off day. Like, there's no off day. There's no weekends for players. There's the new bye week thing. But if the Ottawa Senators play on a Monday and then they don't play again till Thursday, like, Matt Duchene doesn't have Tuesday and Wednesday off. He's not going home and eating his mom's lasagna and like talking to his dad about building a boat. He's going to practice the next day, and he's going to practice the day after that. And let's say they play Saturday in New York and then Sunday in Ottawa, and then the CBA mandated off day is Monday. He's not spending 7 hours on the road driving back and forth to see his friends. First of all, he's 28 years old. Like, how many of his friends still live in that town? They all probably have families and jobs. Like, this idea that like his friends and family are going to come to all of his games in Ottawa. His friends and family have lives. They have jobs. You can't drive 3 hours, 3.5 hours to go see a 7 o'clock game. Hey, I'm leaving work early again. What do you mean? Well, Matt Duchene's playing at home, and it's a big game. Who's it against? Well, it's against the Devils. It's not really the biggest game. So you're leaving work early at 3 o'clock for the 12th time in a row and to go see an Ottawa Senators game. Well, Matt Duchene wants me to be there. Oh, so you're going to hang out with him after the game? Well, no, he's actually got to go home and go to bed. He has practice the next day. I don't understand the whole rationale of why that's a draw for – because Duchene even said it at the press conference. He's like, yeah, it's great to be close to where I grew up. I mean, you're a grown ass man. Like, you have a job. Like, why would that factor into where you're going to sign your last big contract? The distance from where you spent, the distance of the drive to where you spend your off seasons. That blows my mind. Like, can you imagine if the LA Kings were like set up for the next like 5-6 years and they gave Duchene a great offer and he's like, well, driving to LAX sucks. I don't want to do that. I'd rather just get in my car after the season and drive on the Mississauga Highway or whatever it is. Is that what it's called? I don't know if that's what it's called or not. But that like, Matthew Shane's going to resign there for sure. But I don't understand why where he puts his feet up in the summer matters so much when it comes to the distance from where the hockey rink is, where he plays half of his games. It's so bizarre to me.
If I know anything about guys in their mid-20s who are successful and rich, what they really want is to have their immediate family and all their high school friends nearby with access to them at all times. Yeah, it is. It is a little bit.
But he doesn't have high school friends. He played junior hockey. He played in Brampton. Yeah. Like he doesn't. That's the other thing too. Is like his friends probably don't all live there. Like all of his friends don't have. I mean, wait, is it true all Canadians have cottages that they go to in the summer? It seems like every summer on Twitter, it's like off to the cottage, and I'm like, why am I still in my crappy apartment in New Jersey? Why can't I get a cottage?
There's like 8 Canadians who have cottages, and the rest of us just pretend to be friends with them so that we can get invited up.
I don't know. That may totally be a Canadian thing where it's just so cool to be close to your family or something. I don't know, but it just seems crazy to me that he would decide where he's going to play hockey for the next 7 or 8 years, depending on how far it is from where he fishes in August. But I don't know.
So you think it's a sure thing that he signs long term?
I feel like Ottawa wouldn't do the trade unless they had like a wink wink handshake type thing, because they can't extend them until the season's over. So they can't just be like, hey, we got you and here's 8 more years.
But that's a long time for like a wink wink sort of deal. I mean, he could come over, he could light it up. He could, you know, suddenly break through and be that kind of player that you know, that point of game guy that we thought he was gonna be. Or it could go the other way. It could go south. And what's going to be interesting is, and to be clear, like I clearly they're making this trade on the assumption that they're going to sign him. That's clearly the idea here. And most players do end up signing their extensions with the teams they're with. But for whatever reason.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Seem to get off the ground. Like a lot of the reports kind of behind the scenes up here that have come out in the last couple of days are that they were never close with him. And yeah, you do kind of wonder what the Senators are going to be fascinating to watch next offseason, like starting on July 1st when they can start extending these guys, because they've got Matt Duchene, who they just gave up a ton to get. They've got Erik Karlsson, who he's got 1 year left on his deal after this year. So he's a free agent in 2019, which means he can sign an extension next summer. And this is a guy that, I mean, if he went to the Senators and said, I want to make $12 million a year, I don't know that they have a really good argument not to pay him that. I mean, he's making, I think, 6.5 now. He's one of the most underpaid players in the league. And then they've also got Mark Stone that they need a new deal with. And that would be tight for any team, but let alone the Senators, who as we all know, tend to be a little bit reluctant to spend money.
Cheap.
And
you can say
they're
cheap.
Still, they're yeah, cheap. That's, cheap. I mean, they're still locked into Bobby Ryan. They're still locked into Dion Phaneuf. This is where those deals, you know, unless they can find a way out, if they can find, you know, find a way to escape from those deals, they're going to start running out of room really quickly. And especially if Erik Karlsson comes in and demands just market value, you know, for Not that he tries to even hold him hostage, but he just, I mean, he should be the highest paid defenseman in the league. So, boy, it's...
What do you think Duchesne gets? Like, what do you think his cap hit is? I was thinking like something around 8.5 was my guess.
Because I feel like if he had to sign right now, he's in that Turris range. I mean, I think Turris getting 6x6, I think Duchesne probably gets a little bit more than that, but I don't know that he gets much past 7.
Yeah. Interesting.
But, you know, this time next summer, after the Senators have just given up a bunch to get him, let's assume this goes the way Ottawa wants it to go. He plays well. He's a bona fide number one. They make the playoffs. They, you know, maybe have a bit of a run again. And everybody in town loves Matt Duchesne. Everyone's buying their number 95 jerseys. And, you know, he's one of the new faces of your franchise. At that point, yeah, the number goes up a little bit. And, you know, it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be fascinating to see just how they play it. Like, I mean, do you put everything on hold until you get Erik Karlsson signed? You know, that would seem to be one way to do it. But, you know, on the other hand, if he ends up waiting, then everybody waits. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle it. And it's going to be very interesting as we start to get a sense of how the Karlsson thing is going to go, when and if you start hearing stories leak out of Ottawa that maybe Erik Karlsson is asking for too much, or maybe Erik Karlsson needs to take that hometown discount to keep the team together and be a leader and all of this stuff, and kind of see how that, how all of that starts playing out in terms of who puts what out there strategically. It's going to be interesting. And certainly if they could move Ryan or Phaneuf, that makes everything a lot easier, but I don't know that they're necessarily a sure thing to lock up Matt Duchesne. And for the record, even if they've just kicked the can down the road and Duchesne a year from now is the same situation as Turris, that's still worth something, because you have this window while Karlsson's the best defenseman in the world and while he's underpaid.
Yeah.
And, you know, so yeah, I mean, if you can get, you've got 2 years left of Erik Karlsson as a $6 million defenseman. If you have a number one defenseman for both of those years instead of just one of them, then that's worth something.
Number one, but, center, you mean?
Yeah, he's going to be fun to watch.
You know, that's a good point about the hometown discount, because Matt Duchesne grew up just a stone's throw, well, like 145 stone's throws. He's only 3.5 hours away, so it'll probably take like an eight-year, $8 million deal because he's so close to where he hangs out in the offseason. I don't know. It's fine for Ottawa. It's just so weird how Ottawa fans... It's so funny. Like the last time we did a podcast, I believe we were talking about how boring Ottawa is and people got mad about that. And then Now we're going to do a podcast about how Ottawa's trade is like, it's fine. And people are going to get mad about that. So it's almost like we really didn't miss 4 or 5 months of time. We're just hitting the ground running, man, pissing off Ottawa fans, praising the Predators, and just, Joe Sakic, whatever.
I don't know if the Senators are going to win this deal, but I like that they made it. And I like that if you strip away the three team aspect of it and just look at it like purely from Ottawa's perspective, this is a very old school trade. You know, like they traded their number one center for another number one center. Like we used to see these deals happen in the NHL a lot, but now it almost every trade is either two guys you never heard of, or it's somebody right now for somebody in the future, or every once in a while it's like, I'll trade you a forward for a defenseman because we both have these holes in the roster. You almost never see this position for position. Like, I just think this guy is better than that guy, so I want this guy on my team instead. And like, you know, like I said, we're going to be talking about what Colorado got and debating it for 5 years. It's going to take 5 weeks before people are going to start declaring whether Ottawa won or lost this trade. And it's, you know, they put their necks out on it. And I'm interested to see how it goes. But I would not want to be someone in the Ottawa Senator front office if, you know, Kyle Turris jumps out and gets 10 points in his first 5 games with the Predators.
All right. So we have about 10 minutes left, and we missed the first month of the season. So What do you want to do? You want to just pick a team? Pick a team that we both think is crappy.
Why don't we maybe just hit on a couple of the real surprise teams and sort of do like a minute each and just is this a real or fake?
Okay, let's go. Let's do it. Let's do it. We got 9 minutes. Okay. Let's do it. Boom. All right. Who's first? Vegas. Real or fake?
New Jersey Devils. First place in the Metro.
Real-ish. They're not this good, but they might be good enough to be that bad team that makes the playoffs as opposed to last year when they were just bad and they were like 9-3-3. So I'll say real-ish.
Okay, I think I'm on more or less the side. I don't know. I like them quite as much as you do, but yeah, they're pretty good.
They're fast.
We chatted about this on email just a little bit. Just the Rangers had a terrible start. Now they're hot. This is your team that you kind of see more than anyone else.
Yeah,
it's
the worst. They're still weirdly kind of bad-ish because they've won four in a row. They came back to beat Vegas when Vegas was playing the second half of a back-to-back on the road, and the Rangers basically came back and stormed their fourth-string goalie. They won two games in overtime in Florida. They played well in the Tampa game. They didn't really play so well in the Florida game, and they probably would have lost the Columbus game if the Blue Jackets didn't commit three really stupid penalties in the third period in the offensive zone, and they got three power play goals out of it. So I tend to think they're maybe – this is kind of who they are. Like, they're a little bit better than a 500 team. I didn't think they're going to make the playoffs before the year. So what was the option? Real or bad? Bad-ish.
Yeah, real or fake.
Real or fake. Fake-ish. The Devils are real-ish. The Rangers are fake-ish. They're probably somewhere in the middle.
So really, the Rangers are kind of real in terms of what their record is right now. That's about where you
they're 500. When they were 3-7-2, they weren't a 3-7-2. That's like the Avs last year. They're not that bad.
Yeah. And I feel like Montreal is kind of the other one that if we were doing this 2 weeks ago, we'd be talking about them hitting rock bottom. They're about the same with the caveat that I'm nervous about this Carey Price injury. You know, I know they say,
Carey Price is hurt. No way. Has that ever
just going to miss a couple of games, before? Just going to, you know, just a tweak. He'll be fine. But we've been down this road before. So, I mean, I think anytime you talk about the Canadians, it's always implied that it comes with a disclaimer that if Carey Price missed a big chunk of time, they're screwed. But yeah, I mean, they weren't going to shoot 3% all year, and it's no big surprise that they're scoring now.
Yeah.
The three teams at the bottom of the East, Carolina, Florida, Buffalo, all three teams kind of thought they were going to be in the playoff race this year.
Florida did. Florida was stupid to think that. Buffalo, sure. Buffalo's letting me down, Sean. I really thought Buffalo was going to be good.
What do you do if you're the Sabres? Like, I keep getting messages from Sabres fans who are like, what should we do?
Just
like,
drink heavily.
They fired. Yeah, that's pretty much it. They fired the coach. They fired the GM. They tried to rebuild the blue line. You know, it's and they're here. They're dead last again. Like Jack Eichel's breaking sticks and stuff. This is like you can't even say, well, you rebuild. I mean that they haven't finished the first rebuild yet. How do you can't start over again? But oh, man, I don't. Sabres to me are like the saddest team, I think, so far this year. Even I would put them even like on the misery index, even below the Oilers. Because I still feel like the Oilers are going to turn it around.
Like the Oilers' issues are going to be in the playoffs when they don't have enough depth. Like their issues shouldn't be, because that division the Oilers play in is so bad too. They're eventually going to catch everybody, I think, once they're like Draisaitl missed the beginning of the season.
I mean, they're 7 points back. I didn't really realize how.
Of the playoffs? That's funny.
They're 7 points out of a wild card right now.
That's plenty of time. I think they'll be fine. Like, I'm kind of down on the Oilers, but I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs bad. I think they just have too many holes up front bad, but I think they have enough studs. I mean, the big thing last year was Cam Talbot was stopping every single high danger chance he faced, and now this year, shocking, if you keep giving up high danger chances, more of them are going to go in than you want, and now he's giving up like one more goal per game than he did last year, and that's a big reason why they're losing. So I think it'll all correct and sort of Benjamin Button it and meet in the middle.
Yep.
That's pretty good. I haven't said that term in a while. People get that movie reference, right? Benjamin Button, old guy.
Sure. Oh yeah. Timely. Sure. The at the top of the Pacific, like I think we would agree. Vegas, nice story. Fun to see them doing well. I mean, they're better than we expected, but nobody's thinking that this is going to challenge them. What about the Kings? Are you buying in on this?
Let me tell you about the LA Kings, Sean. There was a sports writer who works for Vice Sports who went to Las Vegas and did some gambling recently and had a three-team parlay where the two early games in his three-team parlay featured the underdogs winning outright. I believe the Devils beat the Leafs in Toronto, and I believe the Penguins beat the Capitals in Washington. And my favorite, is this about me? It is. The Kings lost in overtime to the Calgary friggin' Flames at home. That's like their one loss this season, and they happened to lose that game, costing me approximately $200 on a $20 bet. So, no, the Kings suck. They're terrible.
So what
they're
you're
stupid.
Saying is you're not going to be able to be objective on this.
Well, no, objectively, the Kings are mean jerks, and I don't think they should ever win a game ever again. No, they're probably. I was surprised that wasn't a bigger deal last month. Was where Drew Doughty was like, "Hey," someone was like, "Hey, Drew, what's the big difference this year?" And he basically said, "I fucking hated my coach last year. He was miserable. He made our lives miserable, and now he's gone forever, and I'm happy." Everyone was like,
"I feel like we've all kind of weirdly agreed that like Drew Doughty can say whatever he wants, and nobody." Gets that upset. Like over the summer, there was that time where he was like, I'd love to play in Toronto sometime. And everybody was like, we know what he meant.
Drew.
And you're like, what? We're doing that now?
Right. PK Subban gives money to a hospital, and it's like, oh, that's selfish PK Subban. Wait, yeah. What? I don't understand. But the Kings are good again. They'll be. They were always good. They just couldn't score, and now they're getting some goals. They play in a crappy division. They're good.
It's not a good division.
Yeah.
All right, we got 5 minutes. Did you want to do some reader questions? I thought I saw a couple of good ones, and now I'm not going to be able to find them, and I'm going to end up like.
Oh, here's a question. Heidi Klum asks, Sean, why are you so handsome? Oh, look at that. Good for you, Sean.
Oh gosh. Who among us can say?
I didn't realize she was a big fan of the podcast. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, there are some good ones. I'm scrolling down because there were a lot. By the way, thank you very much to everyone who spent like the last 6 months constantly asking us if the podcast was coming back.
Yeah, good job harassing the person who runs the Vice Sports social media account to drive that person insane for the past 4 months with tweets about biscuits. They're probably like, what biscuits? I don't eat biscuits.
My apologies to everyone who I constantly was telling that we'll have an update tomorrow.
I know.
And then
it's coming. Yeah. I've had in my Twitter bio for like a month, like, you know, biscuits, but down goes Brown, probably. And then I had to keep changing it to like, I'm not sure. I'm not positive again. I should probably update that now.
We'll just do this one question because I just thought this was kind of creative. Chris in the Six wants to know, if you could mix two teams from the East and two teams from the Western Conference, which two teams would you use to get the best combined team that would win a series?
So
in other words, you're going to take two teams from the East, two teams from the West, make two super teams.
Oh, okay. I'm not taking like two. I'm not taking like two bad teams.
No.
Okay. I would take. See, I would take Nashville. I'd probably take Nashville for their D in the West, and then forward wise in the West. That's a good question.
See, I was thinking Nashville, Chicago.
I was just going to say Chicago. Yeah, but like Chicago's bottom six isn't so great.
Because you get Corey Crawford.
Oh, right. I would have to.
I'm assuming there's no cap in this situation. So you get the solid goalie. You get Duncan Keith plus the Preds defense. And you get all that firepower up front. So I like that. And then the East is tougher. Because the East, you don't have like that one rock solid blue line.
I watched the game last night where a guy named Steve Kampfer played like 15 minutes and they won. So it's kind of weird over here in the East. Penguins forwards, obviously, I think are the ones you want to go with. But who would I combine them with here? I got to figure this out quick because I think we have like 30 seconds to do this. Columbus, Ryan Murray, Seth Jones.
You know what? You know what? Screw. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing.
Bobrovsky.
Columbus would be good because you get the goaltending, but I'm going to go. I'm saying Pittsburgh, Washington. I'm going all forwards. Brayden Holpe in net is on his own.
Yeah.
It's Chris Letang and five scrubs, we're just going to try to win every game 10-9.
Brooks Orpik. Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, folks, we're going to be back next week unless, you know, maybe something happens. Who the heck knows? Thank you for waiting. Thank you for being patient. And thank you for going on iTunes and giving us 5 stars for this 38-minute episode. That's pure gold. Read us on the internet. That's all I got to say. Say goodbye to everybody, Sean. Sign us off.
See you, everyone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.